morning. Welcome back to MetaLife and Creative Disturbance. Today, I'm Yvan Tina. I'm a doctoral student in the Art and Technology program of University of Texas in Dallas. And today, I'm very honored to be with Yonat Tsu from Symbiotica. Good morning, Yonat.
Good morning. It's such a pleasure and honor to be here with you.
The honor is on my side. So I guess that the people from the outside know you well, but do you mind actually saying who you are and what you do?
So my name is Yonat Tsu, and I'm wearing few hats. I guess I'm an artist who works a lot with biology, with life, especially with the technologies of tissue engineering. Mm-hmm. And I was working as an, I am working also under the banner of the Tissue Culture and Art Project. I am also a scholar, so I am the academic coordinator and researcher in Symbiotica, which is the Art and Biology Laboratory in the University of Western Australia. So I do teach and write about the field of the manipulation of life and its, you know, philosophical, ethical, social applications. I'm also a visiting professor at Biophilia and Art Biology at the School of Art and Design in Aalto University in Finland, and about to go to the Royal College for the Arts, the School of Design, to do some work, teaching and research over there.
Thank you very much. So I had the great pleasure to attend the NeoLife conference that you have organized in October, if I'm not wrong. And I must say that it was a great meeting of people coming from a different part of the world and who have various disciplinary background. So it was a great opportunity for me to expand my understanding of bioengineering and all that make use of living matter. So in this podcast, we won't talk about the whole body of work that you have produced since almost 20 years now. It just seems to me that your most recent project are dealing with this notion of aliveness and the perception of life. So I'm talking here about your exhibition called Futile Labor, and maybe the previous one, which was based on the work of Stefan Leduc, where you're questioning the idea of liveness from motion. Can you please come back to your approach to life and how you are interested in that definition of liveness or its perception, actually?
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, the biggest question it's always been asked through history, and I believe it's still been asked and will be asked for a long time, is the question, what is life?
Yeah.
And this is not just a question, a biological question, if you want, you know, where life begins and non-life or end of life begin, but also it's a philosophical and ontological question. What do you mean by life? What is the living? And how? And it a lot depends, again, on who is asking and the perception of life by the living subject that is asking that. So, of course, as human, we tend to be very anthropomorphic. So we think that life is something that is similar to what we are to a certain extent. And this is, you know, quite an obvious perception to take. Mm-hmm. So we were very, very interested in the idea of what is life? When does life begin and how do we perceive it? And we also wanted to show, because now with the whole technological advancement in biology, you know, people are coming with those new statements about, you know, we created life from scratch, such as Craig Venter and other people. And we wanted to show with the peace mechanism of life that this kind of question and statement happened previously in history. And a good example is, of course, the mechanism of life by Leduc. who actually created lifelike droplets that look like cells that evolve and then disappear, created by certain chemicals that he put together. So again, just as much as today we're looking at this kind of attempt by Ludek as some more naive and overstated, I think we should also question the people who say that they have now created life from scratch in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, especially if I'll go to the question to Craig Venter, Cynthia, as the, you know, the first life that its parent is a computer, I would say, you know, we actually, what Craig Venter has done, and, you know, this is a great technological feat, he actually took a cell already built over, you know, billions of years of evolution, a living cell of a bacteria with the smallest DNA,
mm-hmm.
and actually just took the DNA out, synthetically replicated it, and put it back into the cell. I think that what the cell is giving is mm-hmm. extremely important. I think we over-exaggerate the idea of the DNA is life. DNA is not alive. DNA has some part to take in the phenomena of life. However, the context in which DNA operates is important, if not more important than that. So
that's why, actually, excuse me, that's why you're interested in this notion of a body without organs? Because
not thought about it in that regard, but yeah, the idea that we have to look at the bigger context, you know, in life, that this kind of attempt, I guess, which is, you know, very typical for science, but also for human in general, to reduce everything to components and parts in order to try and make sense of it mm-hmm. is actually, not very useful in many respects, especially when we look about life, because it's actually a lot about the interrelations among those parts, which actually enable the phenomena of life as we
mm-hmm.
think it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I would say that this kind of idea of genotype or putting the DNA as the source of life is very patriarchal and very, if you want...
Why is it patriarchal?
And chauvinistic? Because when you think about what the male contribute to the, you know, beginning of new life.
Yeah.
Yeah, the male bring the sperm. The sperm is mostly DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it. What the female is bringing, she's bringing the egg.
Okay.
She's bringing the womb. She actually, you know, is the, if you want, if I'll say, the incubator.
The milieu.
Yeah, the milieu that makes this life form and grow until it becomes independent. So, of course, you know, there is, I would say, some kind of... male desire to think that the DNA is the thing. And I would actually say that maybe Craig Venter is suffering from womb envy, but, you know, I'm not sure. That's something to ask him. So this is a little bit about the mechanism of life, a little bit about, you know, how... life is more complex than that. We also use the a 3D printer that was built with a Corey Van Sykes. And, of course, the project is in collaboration with her and Oron Katz. Because, again, we have now the new hype technology of 3D printers.
Yes.
And they are now used as the tool that will print life in real time, immediately. And I think we, again, talking about that, there is the machine, the 3D printer, but many times there is, again, we're not thinking about the materiality of what actually the 3D printer is, you know, there, but what materials are used are extremely, extremely important. So we're thinking, oh, we'll just send the program somewhere and the things will be printed and come alive. But we can't just send a program. We have to send also the different materials in mm-hmm. order for the program to actually work with the, you know, the characteristic and the phenomena of the material and how material interact together. And this is usually not discussed. Again, in we're talking about the program, the DNA. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about the materiality. So,
okay, so yeah. it's very interesting because during the time of the conference, you opened this new exhibition called Futile Labor, yes. Which was questioning the relationship between mechanization and abstraction of living matter. And it seems yes. that now you're not looking at the mechanism as such, but you're looking into the materials that from which yes. one can make life. How did you evolve in your yes. reflection, what was the process?
Okay, so Future Labor started with a project to which we received a grant to actually try and use tissue engineering techniques mm-hmm. to make skeletal muscles mm-hmm. into actuator. So skeletal muscles, if you in our bodies, you know, they are the cell, one of the major cells that involve in actually movement. Mm-hmm. And when you grow them in a dish, in a petri dish, they tend to, if you do certain processes, to twitch, to mm-hmm. contract and expand. So we wanted to actually use this phenomena to actually create, if you want, kinetic semi-living sculptures. And this is also the idea that we associate movement with something that is alive. Yes?
Okay. Yes.
So even robots, if they move, we tend to think they're alive. But yep. if we are using living cells in a gallery, but because mm-hmm. the movement is so subtle and so not in human scale, they look like they're not doing anything, people won't think they're actually alive. So if yep. we wanted to introduce the element of movement in real time, in order to enhance the idea that those entities are semi-living. They have living components yeah. in something. It was a very difficult things to do. I think it was really beautiful to see how difficult it was for us to engineer that.
Yeah.
life defies our desire to control it and make it into something that we want. So also this kind of idea of utility came into the project, which is important. And what we did in the exhibition actually is put those muscles that we electrically stimulated to move. Mm-hmm. And we again, because the movement is so, so small, people could not see it with their eyes. But we didn't want to, again, to become, to show, you know, to have a microscope or something, another technology that will enhance the movement. We wanted to enhance this movement more by body sensations rather mm-hmm. than experience. Mm-hmm. So we work with Chris Salter to actually, that the movement will be translated into actuators on the wall. So you will sense, on the floor, so you will sense some kind of, you know, subtle movement mm-hmm. as you through a corridor to see those cells. So this was the future labor. We also, you know, our work is very much... not very obviously, but I hope subtly, is political. And, you know, we wanted to talk about the changing labor, relation to labor in current society. That, you know, the use of bio-labor was through history and still is today. That, you know, we still have human slaves. No one can deny that. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. we also have a new kind of bio-labor, other organisms that are fragmented of bodies, fragmented parts of organisms that are becoming factories for us to produce things. So we wanted to look at this kind of change in relation to labor and say that all this kind, you know, of new biological technology is also... involved a lot with biopolitics. So who's the one who gained and who's the one who's actually become the raw material and the new biolabor?